track is a pretty big medley. And I think it speaks to sort of like, you know, I mean, Christmas music, like there's a lot of holiday music.
Yeah.
So like you had a lot to choose from. What was kind of the process for choosing what you were going to do for that, for the album?
Yeah. So basically, I think last September or even before then, I had this idea like that I wanted to put together a Christmas album, but I really wanted it to sound like a traditional Irish music album. So the first track, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, yeah, that hornpipe, so I swung it like a hornpipe and put some triplets and kind of ornamentation in to reflect a hornpipe. Mm. And it could be treated as other tune types, but that's the kind of the main type that I chose for that one. Mm-hmm. And then Patapan is one of my favorites, and I chose that to be a reel. And that one seems to be one that people don't really know much about, Patapan. Mm. But it's such a beautiful melody. So I went full drive into a reel there, and then
I felt like, especially hearing you play it, it felt like, oh, somebody, this was written for Penny Whistle. Like this is, yeah, it feels very at home there.
Oh, exactly. And I think that's why I enjoy playing it so much, because it feels really fun to play. But yeah, you're totally right. Like it feels so much like a whistle tune. With Deck the Halls as well, that one is very fun to play as a reel and full blast, just like driving energy. Probably my number one favorite of that set to play on the whistle, because it's so playful and fun and just provides all these great opportunities for variations. Well, all the tunes do. I love variations. Just coming up with them is part of the fun. Yeah. But yeah, Ding Dong Merrily on High is a really enjoyable Christmas melody to play as kind of a trad tune as a reel. Had this idea for a couple years, I think, just in the back of my head, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna make it happen. And so basically, like, I grew up listening to Christmas music, and we have a 51 CD player, so 51 CDs could be put into it, and this is back in California. Yeah. So I grew up with that, and we would fill the entire thing with Christmas music. So basically, like a whole variety of music, and there were a couple CDs that were Celtic, like, you know, not just strictly Irish traditional sounding.
Sure.
But they didn't quite do it for me. So I was like, oh, I really want it to sound very traditional, or just like, you know, have that kind of session vibe to it. So basically, I kind of reflected on some of the more popular carols. And of course, this is an instrumental album. So I was like, how can I make it exciting and interesting while it's still being, you know, instrumental, no words at all. So I kind of chose some that were my favorites from over the years, but also choosing the pieces was a fun challenge, because in traditional Irish music, we only have so many different types of tunes, like jigs, reels, polkas, hornpipes, waltzes, all that stuff.
Sure,
so some of them had to be modified in a way to fit the reel feel, or a jig feel, or hornpipe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hornpipe going into three reels, and that's that first set there. So just wanted to not hang around each tune too long, and I changed it up so many times in less than 4 minutes. So
yeah, it feels like a real whirlwind. It's a lot of fun. I mean, like, especially the first time listening. I don't know if this is just a weird thing that I do, but I like to just listen to albums without looking at the track names, at least the first time, maybe a first couple times. So it's kind of like this, just, it's like, what is going to be around the next corner? You know what I mean? It's a lot of fun that way.
Oh, and yes.
It seemed kind of like a strong intro to the album. I mean, you mentioned that, like, of course, any of these melodies, the songs that they go with, we might sing three or four verses, and because the words change, like, that's kind of what changes if you're singing along or if you're listening to a choir do it or something. So you're handling the challenge very well. We're like, I don't mean to sound like judgmental or mean or something like that, right? But I've been sitting in the audience before when an instrumental piece is being done, and you realize on the second or third time round, oh, they're going to play it exactly the same with as many repeats as there are verses. Oh my goodness. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
So that's a challenge. And I think you nailed it. It's really a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Actually, maybe if we hop ahead in the track list too, there's another one. Well, I like all of these a lot, Cedar, but there's one that's a couple, but one that stood out particularly to me is, like, I really want to try this, like, in a, like, my wife and I like to sit down and play music in the evenings when we can. And it's usually, at least lately, it's usually guitar and flute. And we're looking at Irish music almost all the time. And so, and, you know, this time of year, you want to be a little cheerful, little holiday, you know. And one that stood out as, like, oh, yeah, this feels like an Irish trad kind of thing, but it's Christmas songs, was the track 7 that's got I Saw Three Ships, Bring a Torch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that one just felt like, maybe this is just me, but it felt like a strong example of that, like, this can be done, like, could do this at a session, you know?
Yeah, and those are all treated as jigs, so that would definitely make sense there, because the jig is such an iconic tune type in traditional Irish music, and yeah, this track kind of just lilts along, and I Saw Three Ships Come Sailing In is definitely one of my favorite Christmas melodies, even though it's very short. Like, it's basically just an A part over and over.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that's part of the challenge as well, is, like, I didn't want to hang around it too long.
Uh-huh.
So then I kind of took you on a journey by going to the other two tunes that are kind of similar as well, changing the keys, and then returning to I Saw Three Ships Come Sailing In, but in A this time. So kind of, yeah, bringing you on this little journey throughout those tunes. So, yeah, it's a fun set as well.
And, you know, this track too, I don't want you to feel like you have to give away your secrets, Cedar. So don't say more than you have to. But this one, there's something in it that I, at least for me personally, I think of this as a Cedarism, because it's something that I've heard on like your other albums as well, Maybe I'll do a bad job describing it, but if you know what I'm talking about, I'd love to hear about how you build this, where there'll be the melody going on, it's happening, right? And then almost like from the wings of the stage, unexpectedly, but at just the right time, other whistles like hop in and do like a little chord. It feels to me, listening to it, it feels like there's like six more whistles all of a sudden like popping in and saying, hello, hello, and then they disappear again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a really cool thing. I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun, especially on headphones. But like, what, like how many voices are in there? Because there's such, it's such a warm, full kind of chord that like I wouldn't be able to pick apart like, oh, that's three voices, that's six voices or what, you know?
Yeah.
It just feels like the whole cast is all of a sudden there, and then they're gone again in this really fun way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So that one off the top of my head, track 7, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not remembering how many whistles are in it.
Oh, that's okay.
Like right off the bat.
Yeah.
I do actually have the session files somewhere.
Yeah.
I definitely love harmonies and I love layers and different octaves as well. So low and high whistles working together, and even like third octave stuff as well, which rarely shows up, but I'm doing that more these days in live performances, playing in the third octave just to be heard because I'm unamplified sometimes.
Oh, sure.
But for this set, yeah, definitely bringing some other whistles in to kind of harmonize with the melody.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost treat them as backing vocals sometimes. That's kind of how I feel about them.
Yeah, and I got you.
Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, just to kind of pop them in here or there, or sometimes they're more supportive. But the harmonies were very fun to figure out on this track as well. And so, yeah, just love to kind of treat whistles as voices in a way and to fill up the sound and just make it very joyful and fun and interesting, because yeah, for myself, I would want to kind of be like, oh wow, that's a cool element whenever I'm listening to any music from anybody, to just be surprised and you know, to enjoy all these cool elements. So yeah,
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, Cedar, because like, you know, I call this little like chord surprise a Cedarism, but like I feel like there's a lot of Cedarisms. Like I could,
oh yeah,
I think I could recognize your music, you know, not to be like, oh, I'm a detective, you know, rather like you've got a distinctive way of playing, you know, and I think that it'd be recognizable. I mean, like, you know, other people do cool stuff too, you know, but like, on that opening track, which is it? No, it's going to be our last track. We'll talk about Carol the Bells later, but like some of the breathy play.
Oh, and, yes.
Something that maybe we could call it like, melodic percussion is like a way.
Ah, yes.
You know what I mean? You do a lot of that. In fact, yeah. Track 4, I think, has some really good examples. It pops up in a lot of tracks, but where you use your whistles to make percussion, like really lively percussion, but it's also participating in the melody or harmony. So it's like doing double duty.
Yep. for sure.
Maybe we'll play a little bit of that one here too. That's the Good Christian Men Rejoice, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, Enjoy to the World.
Yes.
So those cedarisms, how do you come up with these? Are you, do you feel like your library of sounds that you can get out of a whistle is still growing? Or is it kind of like you spent a lot of years just, you know, playing around, finding different noises, and now you have a great library to access, you know, to be like, hey, this would be a fun sound.
Yeah. So I think it's definitely like a combination of learning over the years what the instrument can do and what I can do with the instrument, and just totally messing around as well. And like coming up with extended techniques, especially for my album Harmonies, when we talked about like making bird sounds out of the head and all of that.
Yeah.
I remember like taping whistles in weird areas and just like tapping on them and doing anything I could to get weird sounds out of them. And a part of who I am, which I've been learning this recently, but I mean, it's kind of always been there, is the percussive playing.
Yeah.
So definitely, adding percussive elements, mostly just doing that like with my tongue and stuff like that, making it kind of like a beatbox.
Yeah.
A technique. And so that definitely shows up in this album and Decade as well. But yeah, finding those sounds, it took some time to kind of discover them. And I learned about these techniques through other musicians. They weren't just whistle players, but also like flute players. And just drawing from beatboxing techniques and stuff like that. Just kind of being attracted to whatever is interesting to me. And I'm still definitely learning more for sure about like what sounds I can make. And I just had this thought yesterday, like, wow, a year ago I didn't think about this rhythmic variation that I wish I actually put on the album. And for Ding Dong Merrily on High, I've been performing that live with some people, and I just came up with this cool rhythmic variation, like, darn, I should have put that on the album.
That's super interesting, like, though. I feel like sometimes, I understand that kind of, you know, like, ah, shoot, you know, but like, I feel like what I appreciate about artists is that they're willing to put down some version of their thing and put it out there, because I think, you know, not to pass judgment here or anything, right? But I suspect that, like, if you're air quotes doing it right, then any album is just going to be a snapshot of, like, where you are as a musician, where that track is for you, where that melody is for you, you know, just a snapshot of that in time. It's been developing. You got that snapshot for the album, and it's going to keep developing after that, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
Because I can imagine it might hold a person back if they thought to themselves, I can't put this out until I'm absolutely sure that it's exactly in its final form. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I've definitely struggled with like being a perfectionist, and that's a big goal that I have for here, and especially right now, actually the last month or so, I'm like, I need to let go of the death grip of control, is what I call it. And I actually met with a producer, and he said, it seems like you do kind of put a lot of effort into trying to make things perfect, and there's nothing wrong with that, but like, it would be a good exercise to kind of just capture something in the moment. And that is when the most magic happens in music. And like, I've been playing with these incredible musicians this year and like doing full improv sessions or like interludes of improv. And that's when the best stuff happens. And a lot of the times it doesn't get captured, and then I don't post it, and I'm like, oh, but that's my kind of best stuff. So for next year, I have some music that has been recorded and will be recorded that is a lot more captured in the moment, kind of a thing, instead of like fine-tuned, highly polished, which I love that as well. But like, I'm becoming more drawn to raw, stripped back performances as well, and kind of fusion elements as well, and just making music more magical and just created in the moment rather than just doing all this work in post, which is fine as well. But yeah, that kind of thing. So
No, that makes a lot of sense. I'm excited to see what you put out for sure. I mean, at the same time, I'm glad that you love what you've done so far, because I think it's really cool, Cedar. Like the fullness of these mixes with the, like you were talking before about like the multiple layers, you know, and multiple octaves, things coming in from one side and soaring to the other side, you know, or popping in, that all of that is, it's a really fun experience. Like I've told everybody I've talked to about your albums, like it's cool no matter how you listen to it, but do try it on headphones. Like you,
oh God, yes.
There's a lot of work went into making this like a stereo experience, you know?
Yes. And that's one of my favorite parts about mixing, because I mixed this album as well, is creating this really cool sonic space when you feel like you're in the music, because I love immersion. Mm-hmm. And my college thesis project was about immersion in audio and combining it with visuals and treating the audio in kind of as a 3D object. It was like 3D audio. It felt like you were inside of that moment. And so this album, I wanted the same kind of thing, even though it's not 3D audio, but, you know, to be like in that whistle wonderland world.
Well, that, I mean, I'm grinning ear to ear here, Cedar, because like that makes so much sense. That's absolutely the feel that comes through. So I'm happy for you that came through, and the intention is clear. I feel like Wexford Carol is actually a really strong example of that. Maybe partly because it's like a little bit toned down in terms of how fast it goes. Maybe it allows you to focus a little bit more on like what is going on. But like there are, well, I'll get excited about any kind of drone, of course, to no matter what, just with my passion for bagpiping. But so you've got kind of a drone going on in there, and that kind of lays down this like ground. And then we've got some vocals that sneak in and out here and there. And definitely some of these whistle voices, like there will be the main melody going, and then there will be like a harmonic note that starts on one side of the headphones and travels. You know, like it feels like I'm in a 3D space.
I did actually put my own vocals on it, and singing is something I'm struggling with, but I haven't really exercised my voice in that way much, so next year I would love to be able to sing more, because I'm starting to write my own songs, and that'd be a fun thing to do. But this was a very subtle example of that, so I put a little bit of like ethereal kind of magical vocal elements in it that kind of come and go, and the whole idea for the Wexford Carol track was to make it feel like you were in this icy snowy scape, and that you were immersed in in that kind of scene and to visualize it as you were hearing it. And I love drones as well, and just making this cool sound with the drone and adding these elements and kind of distant whistles as well, and that sort of thing. And then starting it as an air, basically. So without the tempo, and kind of introducing the melody in that way. And that is how I treat it more like a traditional tune is, kind of like, oh, how about we make this an air? And then when the rhythm comes in, that's when a bit more energy and drama are added. And my boyfriend, Mark, he put some beautiful classical guitar onto that as well.
Yeah, the guitar was awesome. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was one of my favorite. It's a longer track, you know, and by the time I was at, like, I don't know, it was probably minute 3 or 4, I was tapping my toe and like bobbing my head along with it. And I paused and went, wait a sec, when did I start doing this? Either I didn't notice it, or it was an impressively subtle build to shift from the air into the more rhythmic thing. Because like I remembered that it had started out as an air, you know what I mean? When did this get a groove?
Yeah, it did kind of show up out of nowhere, because I think I played the melody. Was it once, maybe? It's been a while, actually, since I've heard the whole thing.
Oh, no sweat. Yeah, of course.
But like, definitely was playing that one melody, kind of, no tempo. And then just out of nowhere, it started playing. And then I think the rhythm joined in a little bit after the main whistle set that tempo, and I was playing a low C, which was an intentional choice for this because I love different keys, and a lot of these acts are in standard keys on, you know, high and low D whistles. And then I was like, a nice low C would kind of bring it into a lower pitch, and so that would kind of change that, break that flow of standard keys pretty often. Low whistles are just stunning, and I love to kind of make them sound more percussive and textural. And I think I put some kind of breathy sounds in there by kind of blowing through the whistle in different ways. So the breath of cold is kind of what I wanted to put into that track. But it was a fun one to work on for sure.
Especially the harmonies.
It was really fun to come up with the harmonies. Almost like them more than the melody.
This is one of my favorite parts about doing this whole project, because I can enjoy a piece of art, but then hearing the artist talk about how it comes apart, how it comes about, and also like what they were thinking, you know, as they put it together, it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun at that peak there. Well, speaking of Mark's guitar playing, another one where there's some really lovely guitar going on, which I think must have been Mark, is "O Holy Night."
Yes, yep, that was him. Oh my gosh,
and this one,
so beautiful,
so good, absolutely, yeah. And I also like a lot of these tracks, like we've talked about so far, are like extremely lively, and they have like a lot of layers and a lot of cool stuff going on. This one is sparse by comparison, still beautiful, of course, but there's even silence in this track. speaking of things that could be hard to convince yourself to do, I don't, maybe it's just me, Cedar. So if this is just my insecurity, feel free to tell me that you don't experience it. It's just me. But I'm just imagining that, like, if you got to a point in a track where there was silence, for me, either at the microphone or at the mixing board, I would be like, well, what am I going to put in here? I've got to put something here. You know, like, I can't just let it be quiet. But you did. And it works so well. How do you get over that? You know?
Thank you. Yeah. So this was actually a pretty interesting thing, because in airs, there's a little bit of silence, but this is definitely exaggerated for sure. And that was a suggestion more so from Mark, because he has a classical background. And in classical music, there are longer pauses. There can be, especially between movements. But even within a piece, like, sometimes you're listening to a classical piece and the dynamic is so quiet that you're like, are they even playing? And sometimes they're not. And so basically, I had these phrases, and I would chop them up and actually move them around to give them more space. And part of the reason was to let the reverb tail just kind of take off and treat that reverb as the echo of the voice of the whistle or the flute. Oh, Holy Night is the whistle, actually. Sorry. But yeah, kind of let breath kind of travel a little bit. And to give these moments of pause and reflection, kind of, and just to take it in at its own pace. And so it's kind of like, you know, if a singer or even a poet would kind of deliver a line and then there would be a second to kind of think about it. It's kind of like that. Even then, when I was kind of arranging this and Mark was giving suggestions, I was like, wow, that is quite a bit of silence, but I guess that's okay. Because I don't think there's quite enough silence in music these days, especially. And there is definitely this desire for us to fill the space all the time. But to kind of let it breathe a little bit is definitely something that could happen as well. So, yeah.
Well, it's a really cool feature. Yeah, that's, I've wondered before if bagpipes especially have, like, messed me up in this regard, because I feel like anything I'm playing, I feel like once I start, just got to keep going. You can't stop, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really cool to see silence used as a tool. And I feel like that is a rare thing. That was very cool. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you suggested it. And I think you did it really tastefully. I think it's really good.
Thank you.
I have thought before, Cedar, that we could have something that we might call the Jingle Bell Test. Where if an artist can make jingle bells interesting, then they're in a special club. You know what I mean? And you went for it. You made a stab at the jingle bell test, even if you didn't realize that that was a thing. It's not a thing. But I feel like it'd be funny if it was a thing. Because I've heard a few artists before do things with jingle bells, and I've gone like, oh, that was actually pretty cool. You know, like, I usually kind of make jokes about jingle bells, but that was awesome. And you're in the club, Cedar. The track 10 is very cool.
Like, classical pieces, especially, you know, the Nutcracker suite, that has massive movements and so many different changing elements. and they go on for a while. So I'm like, this is just an idea to just kind of take a little sample that's very recognizable and just play around with that and then move on to something else. So that's basically it for here, and treated that as a polka and kind of just went crazy.
It's a polka. I see.
Yeah, a bit more of that.
That's just me not knowing genres very well. I enjoyed it a lot. I just didn't realize that. Yeah, that makes sense. It's a polka.
Yeah, so that went from the "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" is a waltz, so I kept that waltz feel, but I of course put variations all over the place and danced around with it. You know, basically, like just so many different little elements in there, and went straight there.
I love that you said you danced around with it, though. Of course, it's a waltz. Of course, you danced around with it.
Yeah, both actually physically, because I'm learning some Sean Nos dance, and I actually performed a bit of dancing alongside with it, and then also my fingers are dancing over the whistle a lot.
Yeah,
so both ways.
Perfect.
But yeah, so definitely going straight from the waltz straight into the polka. And just upping the energy, because I can't help myself. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I can't stay slow forever. And then just full on party mode, basically. For sure is like, you know, kind of that polka feel.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely have noticed, like in gigs, that people love polkas, even though they don't listen to trad. And I'm like, oh, well, because it's that kind of dance vibe, that kind of people really like that kind of rhythm and beat, and I'm like, oh, that's probably why they like polkas, because it's very danceable. So yeah, that was an interesting thing, but definitely wanted to take that little segment from the Nutcracker and play around with that. And then Jingle Bells is a polka, and then Auld Lang Syne is not your typical polka. Because it's the legato, I was like, I'll just keep it.
It's usually a slow song, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So this was dun 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 dun, and then I have this whistle just ripping a solo at the end, and it kind of fades out, which I very rarely do fade outs. But I was like, you know, I think this is
I wanted to ask you about that too. Yeah, why'd you decide?
Because this melody is very repetitive as well, and I guess you can say it's an A part as well. Like, there's not a B part. So it's kind of that one melody that goes on forever and ever. And I think people usually sing this at the end of the year, maybe. So it's kind of like, oh, this is the album I hope you enjoyed. And then you fade off into the distance, kind of a thing. Because I didn't really know how to end it. And I was like, yeah, fade out. It'd be fun, especially when you put a little solo at the end and it kind of forces you to keep listening until there's nothing left.
That's where, like, nothing against an artist who decides to do a fade out where it's like just the chord progression in drums as it like chills out, like that's okay too, you know. But there's an artist called Tom Waits who I really admire a lot, who sometimes does things like this where he'll bring in a whole new instrument or just like play an instrument in an entirely different way only right at the end of the track, and you only get like sometimes not even 4 bars of it. Like, you get this tiny little taste, whoa, that's cool, and before you can even want it, it's gone, you know. And that's, I thought exactly that same thing as I was listening to the fade out. I'm like, you know, oh, here it goes, it's fading out, and then something new happens. It gives it this strong feeling of like the party is still going on, you know, like it's gonna keep going.
Exactly.
I'll be home for Christmas. If you were going to come to me and be like, Cedar's doing a Celtic Christmas album, what songs do you think she'll use? Just never would have got on my list. I never would have guessed it, but it fits really well. It's lovely. Why did that one come up? Is that a personal favorite, or was it a surprise to you that it fit? What do you think?
Yeah. So basically, that I'll Be Home for Christmas was a last minute decision to put that piece on the album. It was very last minute. I was like, you know, I think it needs like one more little thing. And it just totally popped in my head one day. I'm like, I could treat that as an air. So
yeah,
that happened because I think the melody is just beautiful, especially with the chord progressions. But of course, there are no chord progressions heard here because it's completely solo until the second whistle comes in, gives a hint at what chords could be there. And that's an alto F whistle, which I love that. And that was another decision, was like, oh, there aren't many keys other than your standard keys. So I wanted to kind of, add some variety in that sense. And yeah, to have just the voice of the alto F in there would be nice. And just treating it as an air. So kind of referencing the original and how the phrases were laid out in the original, but also just taking it and putting it into a traditional context. And then also, once again, having to chop up those phrases and stretch them out a little bit longer and add even more space between the phrases. So if I were to perform it live, I would kind of rush the silence in a way and just kind of go through it a bit faster, which, you know, I'm more used to that because airs aren't, they don't have tons of silence in them, but I'm fine with adding a little bit of extra silence and then, putting those little harmony lines in as well, just as splashes. I call them splashes of harmony because I don't want to overdo it. And I mean, sometimes I probably do, but for this piece, I was like, just a little bit here and there, just a couple notes or even one note, and to kind of give the melody a bit more focus, but then just to support it a little bit here and there with the harmony.
You know, in the about section on Bandcamp, what you wrote up for this album, there's a part where you say some of these tunes are arranged in sets, while other melodies stand alone to demonstrate the beauty and liveliness of their melodies. I guess maybe liveliness isn't the word to attach to this one in particular, being kind of a slower one, but it stands out to me as like, oh, this might be one of the several that was in mind as far as like, it's pretty much standing alone. And, you know, it's just demonstrating the loveliness of that melody.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that's one thing that I surprise myself about. Sometimes I'm like, man, I can just really add a huge amount of stuff in one track and then the other track would be completely stripped down. So there's like so much variation, and same with Decade. The Harmonies album isn't as built up, of course, because that one's more like meditation, relaxed stuff, but still a few elements there. But definitely a ton of variation. So the standalone pieces, I really like just working with one melody sometimes, just one piece. For my original compositions, which are in the works now, like I've been composing for 10 years and haven't really put out my own music as much, but next year it's all about that, like performing it and recording it and all that. But I do have 10 of my own tunes that stand alone completely by themselves, basically like no other tunes before or after, because I want to focus on getting the most out of them. And then for this album, it's kind of the same thing, like for Silent Night, Oh Holy Night, Wexford Carol, I'll Be Home for Christmas, and Carol of the Bells, just to let them shine as they are and kind of in their altered state, you know, because none of them are played exactly how people expect them to be played. So I can be doing, I do both things. So like, just absolutely filling up a set with tons of tunes and tons of ear candy, basically. And then the other ones are treated very differently, but still equally interesting, and that's my goal at least.
I think you're achieving it, Cedar. You mentioned Silent Night. That's that. That's another one that similar to I'll Be Home for Christmas, that like does a lot of letting the melody stand on its own, you know, with some sort of minimal support. I'm curious, with these like less ear candy kind of tracks, do you find that they take less time. I mean, I would naturally assume that they take less time to put together, like in the studio, versus like a really complicated track with lots of layers and stuff like that. But then at the same time, I'm like, man, if it's only one thing, it's inviting you to focus on that one thing a whole lot. I wonder if it ends up taking, you know, just as much time and effort to make it come out right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like the fewer instruments you have, definitely the more stripped back they are, but also the more focused you would be listening to them, because that's all that's there. And when I'm recording, and if I'm recording with someone else in the same room and there's bleed, it just requires me to be ultra focused and do my best with that performance. But in a recording context, it's like, yeah, I'll just focus on this melody and treating it exactly how I want it to be treated, and to just be happy with whatever shows up and to change whatever needs to be changed. But yeah, it's very stripped back and exposed and vulnerable. But yeah, it did take some time to work on, but definitely not as much time as the tunes that are in a set. Partially because the tunes with, well, sets with lots of tunes have a bunch of instruments involved and lots of layers. Like earlier you asked how many layers were in the seventh track. And I actually pulled a session and there were 22 flute and whistle layers in that piece. And there are more in other pieces, actually. But yeah.
Yeah, like, that's not even the big one, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, for sure, like the sets of tunes definitely have required more work and more time, but the single tunes require a decent amount of work, but in different ways, just kind of refining the sound and kind of balancing the relationship between the guitar and the whistle, or one whistle and another whistle and all that. And one thing that I do that my boyfriend calls me out on often is I love bringing the harmonies up a lot and level and making them almost as loud as the actual whistle, but then to bring them down just a little bit, it makes them sound more like they're accompanying and not being the main thing. But yeah, I'm like, I never know where to draw the line for how loud harmonies should be either. So yeah.
That's interesting, though. That's another one of those interesting insights, because I've often thought, Cedar, like, what, like, just thought to myself, like, I wonder what all goes into making this feel so full, you know, like the it feels very full. I think that that's the right word for it, because it's not just the quantity of voices, because sometimes it's just two voices, but it still has a really full feeling. I wonder if that's a big part of the mix of I didn't mean to use the word mix, that could be understood to mean the audio mix, which it actually, okay, so it's double applicable. I meant like cooking, when you mix something up and it's got a flavor, and you know, this flavor here in this case is like fullness. Maybe that's a big part of it, is that the secondary and tertiary, etc., voices are right up there next to the melody, and so it's kind of like it's big in a way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and it's, yeah, the way that the accompanying whistle or other instruments are played as well, that they could make this either illusion that it sounds really big, or it can just sound big because of the notes chosen, like whether they're holding like a fifth instead of a third or something like that, or just how layered and all of that. And but yeah, I love working with the sounds and making really full sounding tracks. It's part of the full immersion thing as well. But yeah, for music that I'm going to release next year, hopefully in January, maybe February, it's a whole other world and whole other project. But that is literally only two instruments at the moment. But the more I come back to it, I'm like, ooh, maybe I can add this and add this. So there's like, yeah, like the more you add, it can become more full, but it's already full enough with just the two instruments. And I won't spoil it now, but like even with just two instruments, there's a lot going on and there's a lot to focus on. You're like, wow, it's just two instruments and there's this much sound. So part of the decision would be what instrument you're pairing with the whistle. And also the type of whistle. It's not your traditional kind of one that you think it is. It's going to be very, very different. But,
oh,
you know,
I'm very excited.
Yeah, so choice of instruments for sure would impact that decision and how it's mixed and how it's arranged for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, speaking of choice of instruments, we've talked a lot about whistles, and I suppose probably flutes as well. But you play other stuff on this album. And I looked back at some of the other albums that you put out on Bandcamp, and I think I've seen you credited with some bouzouki playing on some of the other albums as well. But I think this might be the first time I've seen Balron show up as something that you put down in a recording. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, yeah, that's right.
Is that right? So how's your instrument collection growth going? What have you acquired recently, and what's next on the horizon?
Yes, that's a great question. Because yeah, I'm from California originally, and I'm based in Dublin, Ireland, and that's where I am at the moment. Only for 6 more days before I actually go back to visit home for Christmas. So that'll be really nice. But my collection is split across the two places. So.
Oh, really? You can't take it all with you every time you travel.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly. Yep. So I would love to bring some of those instruments over here, and just trying to make that happen logistically can be a little tricky. But over here, yeah, I've got my Baron. It's a Del Eccles Baron. It's absolutely beautiful. I started learning Baron in 2016 from David Brewer. And then I kind of just have been playing it on and off since. And now I actually had my first Baron gigs this year.
Oh, very cool.
Very fun. But I definitely wanted to put that on this track and just bring some rhythmic drive to it and to reflect the tunes in the drum. Mm-hmm. And since I know these melodies so well, I'm like, oh, how can I kind of reflect that with my Baron playing, with the pitch changing and rhythmic variation as well? But to refer back to your question about the collection, I have not even counted how many whistles I have because some people give me whistles, and
I believe it.
Yeah. And some of them I just have had for years and don't know if I should let go of them or not. And you know how it is. And then we'll just ship you stuff and all that. But I don't have a bunch of space over here in Dublin for them, but hopefully someday. But I definitely have my main kind of quote workhorses of whistles in my whistle bag that I carry around with me everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then some that stay home, and then I swap them out depending on what gig I have, because I don't want to carry too much weight. Got all sorts of unique instruments here, including the Teletoons whistles, which I absolutely love. And they have not really made an appearance yet, except incredibly subtly on Christmas Eve on this track, but it's like you can't even notice it. They're just like a little rhythmic touch. Yeah, it was just a tiny little flavor. that the second part of your question, like, oh, what's on the horizon for instance?
Yeah, what do you have your sights set on?
Yeah, well, for sure, like the last couple of days I've been super obsessed with the Hardanger fiddle. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
Absolute stunning instrument, and listening to Queevy and O'Reilly quite a lot. And because I kind of mess around with fiddle, but I'm probably going to take it a little more seriously next year, because I think I'm at a decent-ish place now that I have actually played in sessions where I'm comfortable playing with people who wouldn't give me the eye or anything. But
yeah.
I just love fiddle, but I'm like, wait, the Hardanger fiddle is even more emotional. And I've known about this instrument for years, but I've only recently just really been drawn to it because of sympathetic strings.
Oh, yeah.
They're just so beautiful. So I'd love one of those, but I don't have the funds for it. So even just borrowing one would be cool, but I don't know who would let me. But
let's put the word out now. If any listener to this podcast happens to have one sitting around, how about if one of those packages that shows up full of instruments for Cedar could be one of these fiddles? That'd be great, huh? Why not?
I would make lots of recordings. Oh my gosh, it'd be so cool. But yeah, that's definitely one. And then the con, or the can, I've heard it pronounced a couple different ways. It's an absolutely incredible instrument. I think it's from Thailand, and it has bamboo pipes that go vertically straight up, and it has this the coolest sound ever.
Does it have it has like reeds on it, right? Like little metal reeds?
I know what you're talking about there as well. There are a lot of cool instruments that are quite similar, but it has vertical bamboo pipes that go up, and it's related to a harmonica in a way, because the reeds are inside and they work in a similar way, and you can breathe in and out and it'll still make the same pitch. And there are like two little handles on it, and a person can put the palms of their hands under those handles, and then they press the holes down above the handles. And it's pretty hard to explain, actually.
Yeah, but the picture that's forming in my mind is definitely interesting.
Yeah. I think it's either K-A-H-N or K-H-A-N. They are so beautiful and hypnotic to listen to, and I definitely want that one. And it's actually cheaper than a Hardanger fiddle, I'm not surprised. But getting one and getting it shipped over and safely is probably a challenge, but definitely on my wish list. And I, of course, me being the trad addict I'm like, there's got to be someone who plays Irish trad on this. And there is, but it's like a 17-year-old video, and the guy hasn't posted since, but he actually plays trad on the can, and it's such a beautiful sound. And I think he played the bird in the bush on that, and it's just flawless. Like, he's exceptional, and I'm like, yep, that's what I want to do. So
wow, yeah,
a couple instruments on my wish list at the moment. So
so yeah, listeners know what to send you now. Well, that's really exciting stuff that's on the horizon, Cedar. I can't wait to hear it. As we're looking at our one last track on the album here, it's Carol of the Bells, which you mentioned, like, you just focus on the one melody here. But this is by no means a simple arrangement. You know what I mean? Like, this is a lot of fun. There's a lot of layers going on here and stuff. With a track like this one, I'm curious about your process. And again, you don't have to give away the secrets if you don't want to. And maybe it's different for different tracks. But with this one in particular, like, using this as an example, would you go into a studio, a recording space, with like some ideas in mind, and kind of lay down layer one, and then listen back to it, and then lay down layer two, and kind of feel it out? Or do you write these things down? You know, like, how clearly planned is this stuff before it becomes recorded? Or is the recording kind of a part of the figuring out what it's going to be process for you?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. It's pretty funny how, like, you've kind of pointed out what happened for this track.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, like, I went into, it's a recording pod in a public library. So basically you can book this space for free, and it's I don't know how exactly big it is, but it's kind of a small space, and it's fully sound. There are microphones in there. Even though for this one, I barely used those nice mics and didn't realize how nice they were until I used them. But I that space, and you book it for free. So I recorded this whole album for free, basically.
No way. You did, like, so was most of this, all of this done in that little pod in a public library?
90% of it, yep.
That's amazing.
And just with a couple mics. So the main mic I used was $50. Wow. So I made it on an absolute budget. And then the rest is just mixing powers and plugins and stuff. Even though I don't have like the top of the line stuff, I love to work with what I have and just doing the best with, you know, kind of limitations. But limitations can be pretty empowering sometimes as well. And just wanted to make it sound the best that I could with the technology I had. And even though we're a year ahead now than where when this album was made, I still haven't fully upgraded my system, but I do have access to another pod that you can also book for free that has even better microphones and more space to put more musicians in. So now I'm like super inspired to record more. But anyway, so yeah, this little space with one microphone, I sat there once and I just kind of had ideas in my head for this track for Carol of the Bells and kind of started just playing my own arrangement of it. Like I referred to the choral arrangements of it, but I'm pretty sure there are differences because I did that dun 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 dun, dun part of the melody for a long time because I wanted to draw it out and then add effects and harmonies and stuff like that. But it kind of messed with that and da 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 da, kind of those lines. And yeah, like at first I did have a totally different version. Like it was my let's get this idea out kind of version. And yeah. Working with Mark has been so fun because he has a degree in music as well, and he comes from a more classical point of view, but also a non-traditional Irish point of view. So he has these really cool ideas that I wouldn't normally think of, and some of them were arrangement ideas. And so once I took that home, I was like, what do I do here? Like, it's a kind of simple melody, and it only has two parts, but my whole goal was how can I make it interesting with just whistles and baron, like nothing else. And so working with him about the, you know, talking about the arrangement of it evolved into what it is now. And starting off with the percussive elements was very fun. So those kind of opened the whole piece, and which exposed the main melody. And I chose my Copeland low D because it's my heart, my voice, my essence. It's everything that I am put through an instrument. And it's basically priceless to me. So I was like, oh, I want this instrument to just sing everything that it can, like just sing out loud and to kind of just express itself in different ways, because I'm expressing myself through the instrument, but I see the instrument as almost its own thing as well. So the Copeland kind of just took off with this, and then I added high D whistle elements and Irish flute as well, and then more layers and more layers and more layers until I added 40 layers of whistles.
No way.
40 tracks in total, not all playing at the same time. Yeah, 40.
Still, my goodness.
Yeah. So between the effects, melody tracks, and harmony tracks, there wound up being 40 of them. So it just became this whole, like, experiment, but also this almost orchestral, because I treated them kind of as voices in a way. But, yeah, just wanted it to end in this big, dramatic, like, oh, kind of way.
Yeah. That's well, and it does. I mean, this is another one that, like, in my notes I put in all bold. I was like, everybody has to listen to this on headphones. Like, you've got to experience, yeah. you got to climb in and experience this all the way. This is really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I panned some of them completely far left and completely far right, and then some of them in between mm-hmm. that, and some just straight on in the middle. So, and I think some of the elements might pan around, but yeah, it's definitely a whole immersion experience for sure. But it was a very fun piece to work on. It's my favorite one of the whole album.
Well, as a consumer of the art, I am excited to see everything that you're working on and whatever you'll cook up in the future too, Cedar. It's a lot of cool
Thank
stuff.
You.
And I also, before we forget, I want to give away a copy of this album. And so if you don't mind, I'm going to do a quick dice roll and we'll announce the winner of the album. Let's see. We got an 18. That's too high. We don't have that many supporters. Let me roll again. 8. That's more like it. Let me see who is number 8. Carol. Thank you so much, Carol, for supporting the show. I'll get in touch with you and get you a copy of this album. And I just want to say, too, one more time, like one more plug. Everybody should get this album. And at least once, probably once you've done it, you'll want to do it a lot of times. But at least once, find the time to put on some decent headphones for it. It's so worth it. And we'll have links to where it can be had on Bandcamp in the show notes as well.
Great.
And I think, Cedar, that with that, I'll do a little bit of chopping up and moving around.